It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome back to Money for Lunch. I'm excited to have you guys here. As always, I want to appreciate you very much. And if you haven't done so already, check out my latest video on YouTube at youtube.com/Bert Martinez. That's youtube.com/Bert Martinez. And You'll have some fun. It may even change your life for the better. I kid you not. Anyway, so I'm going to be putting up an interview that I did with, Boss Rutan. Who else? Did an interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's going to be up. And a couple other people. So they go up there first. You get to see them first. So you want to go to youtube.com/Bert Martinez. And for those of you guys who've asked me, yes, Arnold is back. He is recovering very nicely. Life is good. And let's see, what else? There's something else. What else going on? Oh, I know. How could I forget this? Hey, we're deep in the heart of tax season. Are you ready? If you're not, no big deal. You can file an extension. And by the way, I'm not trying to give you any tax advice. So, you know, definitely seek a tax professional for that. Quote of the day. Quote of the day. A little thought and a little kindness are often worth more than a great deal of money. A little thought and a little kindness are often worth more than a great deal of money. And that quote is by John Ruskin. And so think about that. We're going to get our party started right now with our guest today. Still getting used to the new format. So our guest today is Kathy Rue. And Kathy Rue is originally from New Orleans, graduated from Louisiana State University, Paul M. Herbert Law Center. After graduation, she began working for the Southeast Louisiana Legal Services in New Orleans, practicing poverty law. After Hurricane Katrina, she and her family permanently relocated to Texas and now has a solo practice in the areas of elder law, guardianship, wills, probate, and trust. She also has a general civil practice that includes consumer protection, family law, landlord, tenant, immigration, and good old IRS tax controversy. Kathy Rue, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And let's see. Okay, so you went from Louisiana. Now you're in Texas. What part of Texas are you in?
Northeast. My office is in Grapevine, Texas, and I live in Grapevine, Texas. And born and raised in New Orleans and wound up in Texas as a result of Hurricane Katrina and evacuating from New Orleans.
Sure. And Grapevine is Dallas area, right?
It is. It's right in the middle of Dallas and Fort Worth. So it's about 19 to 20 miles away from each of those major cities. And so it is part of the DFW Metroplex.
Yeah. I grew up in Houston, so I'm a little familiar with Grapevine, more familiar with Dallas or Fort Worth. But, and let me tell you, chances of a hurricane, very minimal in that area. So probably a good move.
Good.
All right. So, let's kind of dive into this because I'm curious. Hold on a second. My monitor all of a sudden started blinking on me. So I want to talk about this because a lot of people are confused about this one document, which is a will. So let's just start off talking about this. Do I need a will what happens if I die without a will? So start from there.
Well, it's my professional opinion that every adult should have a will. If you're 18 years or over, you should have a will. And you can do a simple will. That's perfectly fine. But here in Texas, what it does is it allows your property to pass according to the terms of your will, which is according to your wishes. Generally, if you don't have a will in place at the time you pass away, the laws of the state of Texas will determine how your property is distributed. And sometimes that's not always the way you wanted your property distributed. And then some people think that if they don't have a will, the state will take their property. And that's not true. That's not accurate. The state doesn't go around taking deceased people's property. But the state has a set of laws in place that determine how your property is distributed if you fail to make provisions or you fail to do a will.
Yeah, gotcha. Now, and I'm glad that you said this, that it can be a real simple thing. It could be on a piece of paper. It doesn't have to be real fancy or schmancy, but it's kind of nice to let everybody know what your intentions are and how you want your property divided. Now, let me ask you this. Are there some other estate planning documents that somebody might,
that you might want to have?
Go ahead.
Yes, I think there are some core documents that everyone should have in place. There's four of them. There's a simple will, a financial power of attorney, a medical power of attorney, and a physician's directive. I think those are the four core documents that every adult should have in place. There are other ancillary documents that you can have drafted and you can execute as part of your estate plan, but those are the minimum four documents that everyone should have.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. If I remember correctly, if, you know, whether you have a will or whether you don't, the state will come in and your estate, for lack of a better term, will go through this thing called probate. Is that right?
Yes. If you don't have a will and you own property, particularly if you own real estate, then you need to have your estate probated so that the title to the real estate can pass to your heirs.
Gotcha.
If you don't have a will, you know, you're going to probate your estate and ask the court to determine who your heirs are under state law. And then once that determination is made, then the property can be distributed to those heirs, either, you know, under an administration, or if there are no debts of the estate, then there may not need to be an administration. So those are some of your options.
Okay. And so just so I'm clear, so if you don't have a will, you obviously go to probate, but if you do have a will, do you bypass the whole probate thing?
Not exactly. If you have a will, it's just a document. It's just a document with writing on it until you actually probate it and you have the court recognize it as the decedent's valid will. So
gotcha.
It doesn't really carry any weight or have any legal effect until it's actually probated and the court issues an order that says, you know, this is the last will and testament of Kathy Rue, and it is a valid will based on the evidence that was presented, and it has the effect of her will, and it's legal, and so all of her property should be distributed according to the terms of the will.
Gotcha. Okay, so now let's talk about this thing called the living trust. I've heard that, we should have a living trust. So what's your thoughts on a living trust? What are the benefits?
Well, there was one benefit is that it will avoid probate. If you set up a living trust, of course, it's called a living trust because you create it while you're still alive, and it allows you to transfer your assets into the trust. So if you have a home or you have other real property, you can title it into the trust. You can title a car to the trust. You can title your bank accounts to the trust. If you have a 401k or IRA, or any type of long-term savings plans. You can title those into the trust. And then at the time you pass, the trust becomes, generally it becomes irrevocable, and all the property that's been titled to the trust will pass to the beneficiaries of the trust. And so what that does is that avoids having to go through the probate process.
Okay,
that's one advantage of it.
So everybody's clear, all right? I had this thing called a living trust. I avoid probate. And why is probate? I mean, is probate a bad thing, or does it just take a lot of time? Does it cost me extra money? Talk about why do I want to avoid probate?
Well, probate's not a bad thing. Some people have had unusual experiences going through the probate process, but it's not a bad thing. It's just part of what you have to do if someone passes away and they leave property, and if they leave a will, you definitely want to probate the will. If they don't leave a will, you definitely want to have a determination made of who their heirs are. And there's other options besides going through probate court. You can do an affidavit of heirship, which is an out-of-court affidavit. There's another procedure called a small estate affidavit that you can do if the assets of the estate are minimal. But it's not a bad thing, but it is a process that you have to go through, and you have to hire an attorney. And I think people get a bit overwhelmed process and by having to hire an attorney to represent them and having to follow the procedure that probating a will requires. But just because it may be overwhelming doesn't necessarily make it a bad thing. Now, sometimes there are disagreements between the heirs, and sometimes steps in the probate process aren't properly carried out, and that can make the entire process require more time and a bit more expense. So that's where you get some wrinkles in the process that make it even more overwhelming or extend the time of the process itself. But again, I would like to emphasize it's not a bad thing. It's just something that has to be done in order to wrap up the decedent's estate.
Gotcha. So it may not be necessarily a bad thing, as you said. It just all depends on it really depends on the situation, right? Because I'm thinking, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy, is, you know, let's say I have a real simple estate. Maybe I have, you know, whatever. Maybe I don't even own a home. I pass away. I have very few belongings, so probate may not be a bad thing, and it may not take very long either, because I have very simple estate. But now somebody who has maybe a more complicated estate, has multiple property, multiple homes, children, and all this other stuff, maybe something like a living trust might be better to avoid arguments and disagreements and not to spend a year or two in probate, right?
It can. You can set up the trust to help avoid probate. The thing to remember about setting up a living trust is that you have to fund it. Otherwise, it's just, again, a document, just a white piece of paper with print on it. You have to properly fund the trust in order for it to work for you. And that's a difficulty that people run into, is as they're living their lives and over their lifetime, they're accumulating assets and selling assets. And they don't always remember to document or properly document what assets they've put into the trust, because during your lifetime, you can put assets in, you can take assets out of the trust. So you just have to keep really good records and document those transactions and make sure that you properly fund the trust so that it is created and it does work as a trust on your behalf. One of the things that lends itself to complications in terms of the probate process is if you have, like I said, family members who are not necessarily happy with each other, or their family issues, or if you have blended families, or sometimes, you know, life is complicated. Life is not always black and white. Sometimes it's very gray, and people are busy living their lives and dealing with their lives on a day-to-day basis. So sometimes you have situations where people are living together, but they fail to plan their estate for that event or that activity or that part of their life. And sometimes you have blended families and people fail to plan for their blended families. So those things can sometimes lead to complications and issues in the probate process. But what people need to understand is that that's a result of them living their life. That's not necessarily a bad thing about the probate process. You know, the process is what it is, and it's set up to work, and, of course, you know, it improves. but sometimes the process is made complicated just by, you know, not planning. Improper drafting of documents, people using self-help tools like online kits or kits that you buy in the store to do their own documents that don't contain the proper language. So sometimes those other factors cause complications in the probate process.
Yeah. Well, and I think a perfect example of what you're talking about, too, when people fail to plan, my father's 95, or he'll be 95 next week. And when we have talked to him about planning for, you know, for this stuff, he just looks at us and says, you know, it's not my problem. You know,
he won't be here.
He won't be here. So, you know, first of all, it's funny, but at the same time, it is selfish. I mean, because, you know, it's just, I would think that most people would want to make it as easy as possible for their heirs. Anyway, it's just one of those things that happens. But it's interesting how so many people, like my father, they want to live in denial. They just want to, they don't want to think about it. And, you know, and it's just, anyway, so that's what you're saying. Sometimes it's just poor planning that causes these things to become so complicated. All right, so let me ask you this. I have a friend of mine whose parents really are no longer able to, you know, to stay alone, right? Both of them are in their 80s, and they're both at that, you know, they just can't take care of each other, or they can't take care of themselves either. But at the same time, they refuse to move. And this guy is he's a single kid, and he doesn't live convenient to his parents. And so what can somebody do in a situation like that? You know, there's not a family member, these guys refuse to move. Any thoughts about something like this? Because this is starting to be a more and more of a thing now.
You know, it is, as our society ages, you know, we have the baby boomers who are a large segment of our society. And as they age, you're starting to see a lot of couples and a lot of individuals who are wanting to remain in their home but still need some type of assistance or some type of care. And so what you can do in a situation like that is look for in-home services. There are lots of agencies here in the Metroplex that offer a variety of services depending on what the person needs. Sometimes they'll just need someone to come in and help them prepare their meals and make sure they're taking their medication. Sometimes they'll need a little bit more than that. They'll need some diagnostic work done, such as their blood pressure taken, their temperature taken. They may need blood drawn for testing periodically. So it just depends on the level of care that they need. But there are lots of agencies, quality agencies here in the Metroplex that will offer in-home care if they need it and someone to stay with them as well for a period of time. A lot of these agencies are private pay. So you get into the financial component of whether or not this couple has the financial means to pay for these services.
Right.
And it depends on how cooperative they are. If they're cooperating to allow someone to come into their home and provide the services, then that may be a good start and that may be a solution. But if they're not cooperative in that respect, and they, depending on the type of services they need, they may be better off in some type of assisted living facility or a skilled nursing facility. And
yeah.
then, that involves a financial component because, you know, you have to have the means to pay for both of those unless for nursing and home care you would qualify for Medicaid benefits. So there's a several moving parts in a situation like that. And, again, if the parents are adamant that they're not moving and they're truly uncooperative – and there's not a less restrictive alternative in their, you know, you've tried to move them and perhaps they've returned home or they're a flight risk because they continually leave the assisted living facility or they continually leave the nursing home, then you may want to consider the issue of guardianship because the primary concern is their safety and their welfare. And
sure.
so you have to make sure that they're not being neglected either through self-neglect or, you know, through a relative's, you know, neglect of caring for them and that they're not being exploited or abused because our elder community is very vulnerable to exploitation and abuse. So you have to be... You know, those are issues that have to be addressed as well. So basically what this person would need to do is he would need to start developing a plan of care for his parents. And it's going to involve, you know, based on what I described, several different components in terms of how to care for them.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where, again, sitting down and talking about it sometimes – is helpful, and then sometimes it's not because they're not cooperative. And, you know, it's one of those situations where it's tough. It really is because either that single child has to move to take care of their parents, which sometimes is not reality, or you have to take control of their guardianship, don't you? And then kind of move them.
You do, you know, especially if they are neglecting themselves, if they're perhaps falling, if they have mobility issues, if they're not eating properly, if they're not taking their medication, if they need assistance with their activities of daily living, such as bathing, dressing. It just depends on what their level of care is, well, what their need
right.
for care is. And so that has to be evaluated. Also, they're being uncooperative and they're being very disagreeable. another important component of this whole situation is to have them medically evaluated to see if there's some underlying medical condition that is causing their behavior, particularly if this disagreeable obstinate behavior is uncharacteristic of the person in their personality. You would
right.
definitely want to discuss with their medical provider what their medical condition is. Is this a side effect of the medication they're taking? Is this a new development? Do they, you know, how long has this been going on? Has it become a chronic condition? And what underlying medical diagnosis would possibly cause this? And at that point, they could possibly be diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's or some other type of cognitive impairment that would cause, you know, a change in behavior.
Right.
So those are some of the things you want to look at. So you definitely want to have them carefully evaluated by a medical professional.
Yeah. You know what? It's it's one of those things that, as you said, people are living longer, and it's a reality of our life now. Let me ask you this. You were talking earlier about a living trust. Is that the same thing as a living will?
No, it's not. Those are two different documents, and they do very different things. A living trust is a document that allows you to transfer your assets into it to hold in trust for the beneficiaries of the trust. A living will is also called a physician's directive, and that document allows you to express what your wishes are if you are diagnosed with either a terminal illness or an irreversible condition, and your doctor has deemed you have 6 months or less to live.
Gotcha.
So that's the threshold criteria for that document. You have to have been determined either terminally ill or having an irreversible condition with 6 months or less to live. And then once that diagnosis is made, then that document can be followed. Whatever your intent that you've expressed is when the doctor can go ahead and follow that those wishes. And your choices are going to be, do you want to be made comfortable and allowed to pass gently, or would you like artificial treatment to keep you alive as long as possible? Those are your two choices when you get that diagnosis. And that's what the document says, so that it allows you to express what your preference is, what your wishes are, and it takes the burden and the decision-making off of your family members and your loved ones, because you've already expressed what your decision is. So they're not left with having to make that decision for you.
Okay, so let's talk about a document called DNR, which stands for Do Not Resuscitate. So is the DNR part of, or is it separate from, the living will?
You know, I just had someone ask me that exact same question today, and they're two separate documents as well. The living will is a document where you express your wishes as to how you want to be treated. You know, do you want to be allowed to pass gently and made comfortable, or do you want artificial treatment? A DNR is a medical order. The same way a doctor orders lab tests or writes a prescription or puts in some type of other medical order for you, that's what a DNR is. So it's not done by an attorney. It's not done in an attorney's office. It's going to be done in a medical setting, so either in a hospital, some type of outpatient clinic or a nursing home is where you would have a DNR document signed and executed. Basically, the doctor is going to sign it.
So DNR, I mean, if you're at the hospital, they have a form there that you would sign, and then the doctor would countersign it?
Right. The doctor signs it. You know, the doctor authorizes it. It's a medical order, and so he's going to sign it. And he will consult with you and the family and, you know, make his professional recommendation as to whether or not, you know, he thinks that should be whether or not that's a proper order. Or the patient themselves may ask for it. They may say, you know, based on my medical condition, you know, I don't want to be resuscitated. If I lose consciousness, or if I stop breathing, or if my heart stops, please don't resuscitate me. Just allow me to pass. And so under either of those circumstances, you know, that's when the doctor would sign the document that orders that the person is not resuscitated.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. That is just amazing. Yeah. And again, this is one of these conversations that, you know, it is unpleasant, but at the same time, if you listen to the benefits of what we talked about today, they really are going to make your life easier. Probably make the life of of your loved ones easier. And so I guess if you care about those things, then you'll have that talk and you'll get documents in place. And life will be a little bit easier. Other than that, I guess you'll just be, spending a lot of time in court.
Well, it's always better to plan. It's always better to be prepared. And so it's not a fun topic, and it's not a topic that anyone wants to really sit down and discuss. I mean, everyone wants to talk about living, and most people are busy living their lives.
Right.
So it's not fun to talk about how you want to die and when you're going to die. It's actually quite a morbid topic. But death is a part of life, and I think that that's what we all struggle with. And if you can have a conversation about it at least, at a minimum, I think that's a great starting point, because we're all headed that way. No one gets out alive. So,
right.
Everybody's going to die at some point. So if you can plan for it as best you can, it makes the experience a bit more, or I should say a bit less uncomfortable. Because
a little bit more palatable.
Yes, because your wishes, if you start planning for it, then you're making sure that your wishes are being carried out, whatever they may be, and it takes the burden of decision-making off of your loved ones and off of your family. There's still going to be some things that they will have to do to wrap up your estate, but you can make it as unburdensome to them as possible by doing some planning. And it doesn't have to be any rigorous or extensive planning. Of course, that depends on what your assets are and what your financial situation is. But just starting to talk about it and having a conversation about it goes a long way to get people a bit more comfortable with the reality of death.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I like what you said there. Look, nobody gets out alive. This is one of those things that you can absolutely be guaranteed to use. You may never use your insurance, but you're guaranteed to, use a will or a living trust or something like that along those lines. Kathy, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. And if somebody wants to get a hold of you, if they have questions about wills, probates, and trusts, where can our audience get a hold of you?
They can reach me at 817-874-8877. And they can also visit my website, which is www.kathyroux.com.
And Kathy Roux spells her name is R-O-U-X, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
R-O-U-X.com. So it's Kathy, R-O-U-X.com. I'm sorry, you were going to say something?
Correct. Oh, I was just going to say another thing that goes very far towards planning is having a burial policy. Everybody needs to start, every adult needs to start at least considering a burial policy, because, we never know when our time is up.
Right, right. So. And you know what? Interestingly enough, as quotes go, there's a quote that says, when you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
Yes.
And I think, it's one of those things where you can really avoid all sorts of pain and agony and, and all that other stuff by having a couple of short, I don't know if they're going to be short, but having a couple of awkward conversations and putting some things into place, it helps a lot. And Kathy, we're out of time. I want to say thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. It's been fun.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed participating in your program, so thank you for the invitation.
You bet. You bet. Good stuff there from attorney Kathy Roux, R-O-U-X, and she practices there in the great state of Texas. So if you have questions, you can reach out to her. I guarantee you she can point you in the right direction. The stuff about having a will or not having a will, especially for us business owners, I think a living trust is the best way to go, and those things are fairly easy to fund. And I would sit down with your professional and find out about how to get that done. As always, my friends, let's share this show with everybody you know. Let's help those who might benefit from, you know, learning about this sometimes awkward topic. As always, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.